This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
I'm Allie and I live in Southern California. I'm a huge fan of OTI. Their joyful outlook on sobriety is what finally inspired me to quit drinking. I've been a member since day one and I'm rapidly approaching 365 days alcohol-free, which is unreal. I love that Ben and Shaz are not just the podcast hosts. They also openly engage with members during the multiple weekly Zoom meetings and interact on the community member forum. You will not find a more supportive group of people. There's nothing like this in the United States. I'm beyond grateful to be a part of the Sober Rebellion.
So if you want to join us, go to overtheinfluence.co.uk. Welcome to Over the Influence. We are the best. We can say that. Yes, we are the best alcohol-free podcast in all of the land. It is an absolute pleasure to have you listening if you are just tuning in for the very first time. My name is Sharon Hartley. Nobody calls me Sharon. Everybody calls me Shaz. I'm based in Lancashire in the northwest of England. And I can say this now. It's actually official. I am 4 years and a teeny bit alcohol-free. Hands down, the best bloody decision I ever made back in September 2018. It was only going to be a short break for 90 days, you know, a little bit of a reset, get back to it. On the 1st of December, something happened. Everything changed. I removed booze and I began to fall in love, head over heels, with alcohol-free life. It's an absolute flipping game changer. I don't do this on my own. I sing about sobriety with my fabulous accidental sober co-host, Ben. How's it going?
Very well. Thank you, Shaz. Remember this face. Remember this kind of relatively well-rested, relaxed, calm face.
Yeah.
Because when this podcast comes out, I may very well be a father.
OMG.
It's very, very close now.
Yeah.
I'm fiancé to Jem, and Jem is carrying our little boy.
Little baby Ben.
I think the next time we record a podcast, Sharon, there might be lots of screaming in the background because it is so close.
And that might just be you, the new father.
Exactly. But no, Shazza says I'm accidentally sober because I never intended to go alcohol free. Over the Influence came into my life at the right time. I am a podcast producer. This was a job. But I thought, you know what, I'm going to give this 3 months and see what all the fuss is about. Long story short, I'm now over 2 years alcohol free. It's one of the best decisions I ever made. I feel really proud of myself. I feel confident in all sorts of areas of my life. I've proven to myself that I can, something I never thought I would be able to do. I didn't want to do it, really. And I did fully plan to have a 3 month break and go back to drinking exactly how I was drinking before. But I feel really proud of myself that something that I never thought I'd be able to do, be alcohol free long term. I am now over 2 years, and every single day for over 2 years, I haven't had a drink. And that's fed into all sorts of different areas of my life. And I'm not the only one, because I know that our guest today is also very alcohol-free, has also looked at many other aspects of their life, their health and fitness, as a result of giving up alcohol. Shaz,
well,
I'm stealing your thunder.
No, it's quite all right. What I normally do when introducing the guest is have some notes, and I write down maybe that the person's name and a little bit of background, and maybe if they've written a book, write that down as well. There's no chance of actually forgetting any of this today,
no.
Because our guest is waving his book in my face. It's called Walking Back to Happiness. There's around a dozen books on the shelf behind you. I can see your name on the poster behind you. It's Nigel Jones. It's on your cap as well. So there's no point, Nigel. He's branded up to the flipping eyeballs. Nigel Jones, welcome to Over the Influence. How are you doing?
I'm very good, and thank you very much for having me on. It's brilliant to
be here. You're more than welcome. Ben, before we get chatting to Nigel, can you just take a note on those caps, please? I can see us doing something with OTI.
It's a very swanky cap. And actually, I So
thank you.
I don't know our guest incredibly well, but we have had a few conversations before. I get up really early in the morning because Gems does a breakfast show. She works as a breakfast show presenter. So I'm up at 6 o'clock every day without fail because I like to get up at the same time that she does so I can give her a kiss goodbye before she goes to work. The other day I called our guest because I was like, you know what? I've got a list of people to call, but this fella is definitely going to be up. It was about 7:30, wasn't it, Nigel? I was like, he's definitely going to be up.
Yeah, it was quite late, actually.
Oh, quite late. And as well in the background, we will get on chatting about alcohol-free life in a sec. What's the frog all about? There's a frog behind you. What's that?
Oh, that's Cedric. Yeah, I bought him at an antique shop in Faversham about 4 or 5 months ago because the local frog museum had closed down. Can you believe that?
Hang on a minute.
Yeah. I didn't even know there was a frog museum. Perhaps that's why it closed down. But anyway, it basically, I picked Cedric up for not a lot of money. He was under 50 quid. And we took him along to the Antiques Roadshow about 2 weeks ago. And he was valued at just under $1,000.
Get out.
No.
Yeah, honestly.
Get out. Apparently
it's some artist who lived in New York and died in the late 90s, but he was quite prolific at doing this type of sculpture. Yeah.
Did this artist name him Cedric, or is that your
name? I called him Cedric. I just thought he looked like a Cedric.
Well, welcome to Cedric the Frog. And welcome to Nigel Jones. Nigel, let's crack on because we seem to be diverting before we even got going. Tell us about you. Who are you? What do you do?
Okay, so I'm Nigel Jones and I'm the author of the book Walking Back to Happiness, The Secret to Alcohol-Free Living and Wellbeing, which actually got published about a month ago. And I wrote during the first year of my journey towards alcohol freedom. And so it's the story basically of how I did it, and it reveals the secret how you can do it as well.
This is exciting. Before we get into that, and now this doesn't work very well on a podcast, there's a photograph that we used of you in our community in order to let our members know that you were joining us today. And it's a before and after, and it's breathtaking. So your before picture, I'm going to make a massive assumption, this is when you were drinking alcohol. And
yes.
Your after picture, I don't know how alcohol-free you are on that. You look like two different men. It's astonishing. Take us back, Nigel, if you wouldn't mind, to that first picture and your life then.
I mean, if you think that's a big change, the change inside is even bigger. I think, you know what you see on the outside, yeah, massive, massive change. I've lost over 4 stone in 18 months. Everything about my health has just changed. My blood pressure is fantastic. My resting heart rate is down 15 beats a minute. Cholesterol's, that's gone. It's not a problem at all. I scored like 5 years younger on my medical with the GP, which, I was scoring, I think, 5 years older. So I've sort of got back 10 years in biological years. But yeah, I was drinking for the best part of 36 years. So it was starting when I went to university at 18 and right through really till age 54. So, and pretty much every day drinking. So I wouldn't sort of say I was like had a serious problem. Well, I didn't think I had one. Now standing outside it, I would say it was not healthy what I was doing. But the thing is, when you're inside it, you don't see it for what it really is, because you're in the woods. You're not having a look at the big picture. You're not in the drone looking down. So I just carried on. I mean, I must have had thousands of day ones where I wanted to stop, but just never did. The longest I went in 36 years, and I'm not proud of this at all, was 6 days. And when I got to that, I thought, wow, this is so good. I feel so good that I'm going to have a drink.
Yes, you reward yourself with alcohol.
Yeah, I rewarded myself with the thing that was killing me. So basically, over the 36 years, pretty much every day drinking, once a month I might get a day under my belt. The odd month it might have gone to two, but really it was just I was on the hamster wheel of boozing, and I just never got off it. I was just on it, and I'd lie in bed at night sort of in my 40s thinking, God, will I ever break this chain that I'm in. And I really believed, and I think there's a lot of people out there like me as well, who really think they can't get out. But the good news is you can, because if I could do it, anyone can do it.
I love that phrase. You're in the woods and you can't. I always talk about that as well, that I don't think that I had a drinking problem, but alcohol did cause me problems. And I could only see that when I was out of it, because the problems didn't exist anymore as soon as I was a non-drinker. You must have had that little voice then, because you said, you've had thousands of day ones. What was that little voice telling you then? Why was it telling you to try and break that cycle?
I think you don't have to be Einstein to work out that it's bad for you, but I think you fall into the trap because you're surrounded in a sea of alcohol media and news, and everyone's saying, it's great, it's good, it's fun, it's good for you, it relaxes you. That you're getting like thousands and thousands of messages every day trying to keep you drinking, basically. And in my book, I talk about the tribalism of alcohol. I mean, it's very, very tribal. So we're all born into the alcohol drinkers tribe, basically. From day one, your parents are sort of wetting the baby's head with a glass of something. Every celebration, there's booze. When you get married, you drink. When you die, you drink. So there's always booze somewhere along the way. My story basically got caught up in drinking. It was a drinking story. So I believed I was a drinker. So if I believe I'm a drinker, I'm going to drink. And then, when we'll come on to talk about how I escaped, it's all about understanding who you are, what your story is, and how you change it. Because if you can change your story, you can change your life, basically.
What was the turning point after 1,000 day ones?
It was building up. I mean, it'd been building up for years. And I think it was getting to the point whereby I seriously thought I would be dead by 60 if I carried on what I was doing. I mean, I'd had a couple of panic attack scares, going down to A&E thinking I was going to die. At the end of the day, it was booze that was doing this. And now I'm out of it and I can see back. It was 100% alcohol that was causing all these problems. The tingling hands, the sort of sweats, the waking up in the middle of the night, the anxiety, the depression, all of it was just, it was obvious that the one thing that was causing this was booze. And I realized if I could take that thing away, if I could get out of it, then I would solve my problems. And what made me tip, or what was the tipping point, I suppose, well, I've analysed this a lot, and it was on December the 7th, I'd driven down to Cardiff to pick my 18-year-old son up, who was just finishing his first term, first year at university there. And we were driving back together, and he was just telling me on that sort of four-hour journey, locked in the car together, which was just beautiful time to spend with my son. Of how he's broadening his life, how there was so much going on, the interest, the new discoveries he was making. And I was just thinking to myself, my number's not up. I mean, I've got like half my adult life left. I should be taking a leaf out of his book. And so he inspired me basically to do something. I mean, I'd always wanted to do it for my kids and my wife, but it's so, so hard if you really haven't got a why. A solid why that pushes you. And that was the tipping point that actually turned it round.
And here you are now, which is absolutely fantastic. Your story resonates with myself, and I know so many people listening to this now be nodding like that. You don't realise at the time, when you are up to your neck in alcohol, that there may be any sort of issue. And I think there's a lot of denial for a lot of people over the years. And what you've just said there about your health and the aches and pains and all the negatives in your life while you are drinking. I don't think there's not one aspect of life that isn't touched in a bad way by alcohol. It touches every aspect of life. On the flip side of that, once you remove it, there is not one aspect of your entire life that doesn't improve. And I swear some people, Nigel, think we're joking. They think we're losing the plot when we say no. Seriously, removing alcohol, I think at whatever level you drink, it's a complete game changer. And yeah. I want to talk more about this walking back to happiness. When you've removed it, you do begin to experience real happiness, real joy. And I think for me, even now, 4 years down the line, it still will never not surprise me, alcohol-free life. It still is utterly glorious. And one of the best things is that you truly become the person you are. Did that make sense?
Yeah, completely, completely. I mean, I'm a different person entirely. I mean, I look at this as now as my second life. I mean, there's the famous Mark Twain quote, which is the two most important days in your life are the day you were born and the day you found out why. And I found out why on December the 8th, you know, 2020, and that changed my life. And so the difference this time, apart from all the other times, was I was now using a new method. I believed I wasn't a drinker. And so I knew that I had to change my beliefs. I knew I had to change my whole value system, my purpose, everything to get to break free. Because as long as I kept any thought in my mind that drinking was good, then the door was still open to going back. And so I went on I read a lot of books. I went on a Tony Robbins course. And basically, I started really looking inward at myself. I mean, the first thing I did on day two, because on day two, you're full of life because you haven't had a drink on day one. And so it was like, oh, my God, I'm really wide awake. Let's do something today. And I just started walking. So I thought, let's set myself a challenge of for the whole month of December. Let's see how far I can run. And I thought I could run 1 kilometer, but the first outing was like a 200 meter sort of jog interdispersed amongst the other sort of 1,000 meters. So I couldn't even run a kilometer on day two. But by the end, by the time I got to the end of the month, I was running a whole kilometer, and I'd knocked sort of like 40% off the time as well. So it just shows you, like, you know, if I really believed I could do that, because when I looked at my values, I decided that I was going to have health as a major value of the new Nigel Jones. And someone who's healthy doesn't drink. Well, in my mind, that was what I decided. And someone who's healthy actually does sport or does exercise every day. And so I was adhering to those values and building on them, basically. So really, for the first month, it was really learning about what are values, what are beliefs, what is purpose, and what does it all mean? And I read a lot of Asian philosophy, and in Buddhism, they have this great line, which is that everything you do, every deed that you do comes from your intentions. And so if your intention is to drink, then the deed will be to have a glass of wine or to drink a beer. But if you keep doing those deeds, they become habits, and habits become character, and character becomes destiny. And so you can see from a very, very simple thing like an intention, you can lead to drinking a lot of booze. So for me, it was about unpacking what intentions were. And intentions basically are driven by your values and your beliefs and your purpose. So new Nigel wanted to be, you know, a healthy person who was into learning, into building relationships, and not drinking. And that's what I did. That's how I did it, basically. I worked on those values.
Okay, so when, at what point in the process did you work on those values, Nigel? Because you said that you kind of see this as your second life. You're calling him new Nigel. There's a kind of objectivity to this, because actually you weren't working on what your values were. You were working on what you wanted your values to be. And I think that's a really interesting difference. Somebody who's healthy does this. Like, so you're not saying this is my value, these are my values today. You're saying in the future.
That's what I did. Yeah. That's what I did. So I basically said, if I would like to be this. And then I said, right, well, I am it. And that's the way I did it. So it wasn't something I was going for. The journey, the destination became the journey. And that's how you change your mind. You change it like that. It takes a second to change your mind, and you can do it. You just have to believe it. And so I believed it. So effectively, I wrote down what the values that I wanted, and they were to be loving, to be, you know, to have wisdom, to learn, to be healthy, to build connections, humor, all the things that I wanted in my life. And a lot of them I already had, But there were things I put in there like nothing's impossible, or you know, you can do it if it, you know, do the things that you want to do, do them now, do them today, which is, you know, very much a sort of memento mori thing from Stoicism, which is, you know, remember that you die. And so I didn't want to put it off. I wanted to be that healthy person. And therefore, I told myself I was it. On day two, I was a non-drinker. And that's the difference, I think, because I wasn't struggling up a hill with non-drinker at the top of it. I was already at the top of the hill. And I actually believed it. And yeah, it was difficult to stay there in the early days. And that's obvious. You know, you're going to have cravings. The witch is going to be knocking on the door because it had been there for 36 years. But I had to close that door. And I think on day two, the door was like 5% ajar. And by the end of the first month, it was 2% ajar. By the time I got to sort of like month four or five, I'd slammed that door shut.
Nigel, you make it sound really simple. And now
it's not simple.
No, I know it's not, because I've been there. And there's a lot of people listening to this that are at the bottom of that hill and they want to get to the top. And it's for some people, it's not as simple as saying, I believe now I'm a non-drinker. I can do this. You're a coach as well. What do you say to those people who be listening going, hellfire, it's not that simple. My God, it's a struggle. Where do I start?
I'd say it's a limiting belief to believe that. Yeah, all these are just beliefs that you believe about yourself. You have to start thinking differently. It is hard, but it's as hard as you make it. So if you really want to change, you have to change your beliefs about yourself and address all the limiting beliefs you have. So you know, for me, I started to look at the world with more of a scout mindset. So it's very easy with our egos to think of the world with a soldier mindset, which is basically, you know, I'm Nigel Jones. I'm going to defend the beliefs of Nigel Jones. They're right. They're correct. I'm not going to listen to anything else because this is what I think. And that, you know, for some people gets you to a lot of places. But there are scouts as well who are also soldiers, but their approach is very different. They're continually looking for the dangers that are potentially going to attack the army or the self. And I think if you have that scout mentality and you start looking at alcohol and the ambivalence of alcohol, you know, is it fun? Does it make me relaxed? The reality is, if you scratch on the surface and do a little bit of research into that data, it's rubbish. It's a limiting belief. And therefore, if you can convince yourself, your unconscious mind, with facts, sooner or later, if you tell yourself enough, they will actually sink into the unconscious mind and you will really, really 100% believe it.
You've thrown a few quotes out, Nigel, this episode. I love a quote. If you're a regular listener, you will know that I have a quote board. And I'm looking at the quote from Aristotle. Now, it says, we are what we repeatedly do. We always say as part of our Zoom calls in the community, yes, you know, isn't it wonderful that giving up alcohol can, you know, give you the clarity that you needed to get that promotion, or can give you the energy that you wanted to start that new hobby, or the motivation to run that marathon that you've always wanted to run. But it's not always about big things. It's about celebrating the little wins as well. And I think that, therefore, every day that your head hits the pillow and you haven't had a drink, that is a successful day that you should feel really, really proud of. And we are what we repeatedly do. The quote continues. Sharon, I know you'd like to hear all of it because you're very into your quotes too, especially old ones.
Please carry on. Please do.
We are what we repeatedly do. Excellence, then, is not an act but a habit, said Aristotle. I think what you were saying, Nigel, it can take a second to change your mind. I really believe it can take a second to change your mindset, because what you're saying is that actually I decided that I'm not about to embark on this long, arduous journey to the top of the mountain. Today, I'm already there because I'm a non-drinker now. Of this moment, I'm a non-drinker. And you're not talking about going up the mountain. There might have been a couple of days where it feels like you're slipping back a bit, but actually you're starting the day on top and you're ending the day on top because you are a non-drinker that day. And then it's just about doing it day after day, isn't it? Excellence is not an act, but a habit. We are what we repeatedly do. So if you just take it one day at a time, But you know, you're not looking at it as an arduous journey that one day that you might get there. If tomorrow, if you're a drinker today and tomorrow your head hits the pillow and you haven't had a drink, you've been a non-drinker that day. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It sounds like quite a small thing, but actually it's a fundamental shift in thinking, and it can just, that one thought, like, it can change everything.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And basically, you know, there are key words as we hear as well. I mean, a lot of people, they say, oh, I've given up drinking. Well, that immediately means that you think it's good, because to give something up, it had to be good. So I never said I gave up drinking at all. I stopped drinking. And that's a massive, massive difference. Because if you're at the top of the hill, you're not giving anything up. You just stopped doing something that was really bad for you. And now you're in the new world. And it's, you know, if you put it down on paper and you say to myself, where would I rather be? Stopping drinking, believing that I'm a non-drinker, or stopping drinking, believing that I'm still a drinker and I'm not quite there yet. It's much better to be the non-drinker and then spend some good quality time over the first few weeks, the first couple of months, working on those new values that you've told yourself you are. Because those values that you want to be, you can be them straight away.
I get what you're saying about the mountain and the belief. So I can only speak from my own experiences. And actually, having spoken to a hell of a lot of people over the last few years within our community as well, talk about limiting beliefs and your whys and reframing everything and looking at the world differently. None of that fell into place for me within the first few weeks. I can tell you now, it was a bloody struggle. And it was only a couple of years in where I actually had the strength to say, I don't drink anymore. And I agree with you, Nigel. I've never been a fan of saying I gave up alcohol. I didn't give up shit. I gained so much more. But none of this was easy. And I couldn't have entertained any thoughts of limiting beliefs or anything like that while I was still focusing on simply not drinking. All that came later on. I'm talking a couple of years down the line, and then still I'm learning, and I'm still learning about myself. But I just sort of want to speak on behalf of the people who are really, really bloody struggling, because I don't think it's that easy. I wish it was, because if it was, I'd have stopped drinking probably 25 years ago.
Sorry, Nigel. I know you're the guest and therefore you should be the star, but I need to react to Shaz there, because no, it's not easy. Can I give you an example of the same kind of mindset shift in a different aspect of life? I felt I was made redundant, started my own business, and I was really down on it every day because I wasn't successful enough. You know, the business wasn't doing enough. We weren't going far enough. We weren't bringing in enough money. We didn't have enough clients. It wasn't enough. One day, a mate said, you need to listen to this. And it was kind of like the first ever podcast. It was a guy in the 50s talking into a microphone about success. And he said, the best definition of success that I have found in his career is success is actively moving towards a predetermined goal. That is success. Essentially what he was saying, I redefined my definition of success, because there was a society definition of success, but actually for me, what was the most important thing is that I was independent, that I was autonomous, that I was building something for myself, and therefore I was already successful in that moment. Whereas 10 minutes before I felt like I was a failure, 10 minutes later I realized that I was a success. Yeah. Because I was being autonomous and I was being independent, and I didn't have a boss and I didn't have anybody to answer to. Now, I could build on that success, absolutely, but I was already successful. And I'm saying, no, it's not easy. Of course it's not. What I'm saying is, it's when you find that version for yourself, it can shift like that. It can change like that. If you're struggling now, it doesn't mean that you'll find this difficult forever. Things can change like a light switch being flicked on.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the word easy, I mean, easy is something that is different to everyone. It's such a subjective word. I mean, the reality is, it is easier for me today, almost 2 years in, than it was on day one. And I think the further you go from the mothership or the spaceship called alcohol, the further its influence or pull has on you. But yes, on day one, when you leave it, or day two or three or four, you're still in that gravitational pull of the booze, because it's not so long ago that you were in there. You were one of those drinkers on the ship. So it is going to be harder, but you make your life a lot easier if you start thinking that you're no longer in that tribe and you're in another tribe. And as soon as I joined that other tribe, I was with other like-minded people, similar to what OTI is. It's a tribe. And you're with others who are basically the same as you. They're in the same boat. They're all stopping drinking and they all want that new life. And it's great to talk to other tribe members who are in the new tribe, or the alcohol-free tribe, as I call it in the book. I read a lot of Quitlet in the first day. I think I read about four or five books in the first sort of three or four days, and they were really varied, and they ranged from sort of stoicism to Buddhism to American philosophy and a few of the classics like alcohol lied to you or to me or whatever. But there was this one line, back to the quotes, there was this one line from an American philosopher called Henry Thoreau, who wrote a book called Walden in 1854. And he basically was a bit of a character who thought that New York was too busy for him in the 1850s. Imagine that if he was around today with his iPhone. And so he moved out of New York and moved to this little village called Walden outside in New York State somewhere, and lived in a log cabin and just lived in the countryside, killing his own animals and eating his own food or whatever. But he said this fantastic, he said lots of great things. But the one thing that really resonated with me was the fact that he said, a footstep on the earth does not make a path. A single footstep on the earth does not make a path. Just like a single thought in your mind will not create a new way of thinking. And that just blew my mind, because the next line of that quote is, if you repeatedly walk on the earth, a path will appear. And that is exactly what I did. I actually thought those new values repeatedly through in my mind to create the new path, the new way of thinking, which is basically what neuroscience is today. And this guy wrote that 170 years ago.
It's just a case of doing the work, isn't it? It's a case of, like you talked about, reading the Quitlet. You're doing it right now. You're listening to this podcast. That shows that you are actively putting in the effort and putting in the time.
You've got to do the work. I journaled every day. I had like a calendar on my fridge where I put a cross on it. That was reinforcement, positive reinforcement every day. Bang, crossing day two, bang, crossing day three. And I looked at that every day. And that was, that was reconfirmation of my values. I mean, you have to work at it. Yeah. So there's back to this thing. Was it easy? It was a lot of hard work, but I still found it like it's what I wanted to do. And the only thing that really pulls you back is this sort of craving that comes inside you, this sort of rush of thoughts that, oh my God, alcohol is great. I need to go back and have that glass and relax. And that's the thing that pulls you back in. So I try to understand what that was. What were these voices that were in my head that were pulling me back towards it? And that's another part of the secret, is to try to understand how your mind works and what's going on. And I looked at it as two wolves in my head. There was the craving wolf, and there was the sort of willpower wolf in a way. And by willpower, I don't mean like going cold turkey. I mean the new me that wanted to stay, on these new values. And there was this battle going on. The habits alcohol causes are like, you can, for me, like 6 o'clock was a big key that set the witch going. Or if I walked past a pub, or if it was Christmas, or if it was in the supermarket, these were things that wolf would come into my head. And so it was like, how do you deal with this? And there are ways to deal with cravings. At the end of the day, they always pass. They're like waves crashing on a beach. And you just got to look at it that way. If you've got a craving, then you start to deal with it and you follow a process. And the reality is, and again, sounds like a cliche, but those two wolves, the one that wins is the one that you feed. And I didn't want to feed the craving wolf. I fed the willpower wolf, the new wolf, who basically wanted to be alcohol free. And that's, again, in the book, I go into layman terms how to explain these theories of how the mind works and how you can actually conquer cravings and what is willpower and you know, how does this all work and how does it work for me and how can I deal with it?
We are just going to take a very, very quick break from this episode of Over the Influence and get back to Nigel very, very soon. I've got to say, now I can't remember because I'm absolutely useless. I was listening to one of our episodes, Ben, and I wasn't doing this bit. You did it on your own and you did the middle bit by yourself. And you said, Shaz, and this is how you do it, Shaz. This is how you do it. Concise.
Yeah, yeah.
Short, yeah. Brief, to the point.
Mm-hmm. And that was the coach's pod a few weeks ago.
Well,
you know what? I thought, how I didn't know. Sorry, I didn't realize that you'd listen back because obviously I send
back.
You the edit without some of those bits in sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
But yes, I feel bad now.
I listen to everything.
This bit goes on for ages because Shaz can't stop wanging.
Yeah,
on.
Exactly that.
But should we do some wangy gone very briefly?
Right,
Shaz,
okay, I will keep it brief.
It is Sober October. Lots of people joining our community, which is fabulous. We love welcoming you in. Have you got any plans this weekend? Nigel's all about getting outside, isn't he? Obviously,
getting
he does
out.
It very early. Not all. I'm going to be not for me necessarily.
9K by 9 a.m. I mean, it's big ass.
I aspire to it.
Flipping
but you know
it.
What? As I say this, I'm a dad-to-be. I might even be a dad. I probably will be a dad when this episode comes out.
I think you will be.
But getting outside, if you've got no plans this weekend, Shaz, what are you up to, love?
Get involved. I'll tell you what I'm flipping doing this weekend. Once again, I'm getting out my climbing boots and my waterproofs and my bobble hat. And I am going on an OTI outdoor adventure. So this weekend, we are trolling up and across and over Kinder Scout in the Peak District. Now, this isn't like the challenge we did a couple of weeks ago. It's not Snowdon. It's not one of the biggest mountains in the UK. We're doing those next year. Events have all been released, right? So hold that thought. This is, I say only, it's still a decent trek. It's still, you know, I'd say a moderate
10 miler.
Yeah.
I've done this before. Have you done Kinder Scout
before? Never done it.
It is beautiful. So it's Edale, which is just south of Manchester. I've done this a few times. I did it in the training walks. Me and Danny from the OTI community met up at Edale and we did Kinder Scout. It's beautiful. It's actually a really historic walking route because...
Yes, it's to do with the Ramblers.
Danny, it is. Basically, look, long story short, years and years and years ago, kind of early 1900s, I think they called it the Big Walk. A load of people rambled up this part of the world to say, look, you cannot close these paths to the public. I don't care how rich you are. We deserve to be able to walk in the beautiful mountains of England. So anyway, it's Jacob's Ladder is part of this route.
I'm intrigued.
It's great. It's beautiful. It's really, really beautiful.
Well, we've got...
And there are a couple of places left.
We've got a handful. We've got a handful.
People going already.
Say again?
There's 24 signed up, Shaz.
Well, we've only got
you, love.
half a dozen places left. We are limited, of course, because we do it properly when we do an OTI event. This isn't just myself or Ben sort of trolling around aimlessly in the beautiful countryside. We do it with a qualified leader who knows the route, fully insured, first aid qualified and all that jazz. There are a handful of places left, but being able to book on to an OTI outdoor adventure is one of the many perks of being a community member. On the odd occasion, you will be able to bring a plus one maybe or a friend, but you do need to be a member in order to make that booking. So if you fancy it, trolling around, is it the Peak District?
I think it's
the Peak District, yeah. Beautiful part of the world. There's a whole load of us going and we've all got one thing in common. We don't booze. So all the information...
Get that on the T-shirt. We don't booze.
We don't booze anymore. All the information is on the website overtheinfluence.co.uk. And I just want to add as well, if you're listening thinking, I want to do it, I don't want to do it on my own, I'm scared. Well, that's OTI in a nutshell. Everybody joins this community by themselves. People come on these adventures by themselves and then they leave with friends for life. You are never on your own. And I will be there to hold your hand physically, if you like, you know, I'll do that as well. So don't be scared.
Slap your bottom to get you
slap
up top
your bottom.
Of that Jacob's
Give
ladder.
You a great big shove up to the top of the hill. It's brilliant. So many people are on their own. And before you know it, when you've spent X amount of hours in somebody's company chatting about all sorts, it's a game changer. It really is. So do get involved. We would love to see you over theinfluence.co.uk. Right, let's get back to the episode. Title of your book, Walking Back to Happiness. Tell us about that. Does it do what it says on the tin?
It does, yes. So basically, walking for me is a major part of my life now. It's really my sort of exercise plan and my health regime. So as I said, like in the first month, I started running like 1 kilometer a day. But I mean, running really wasn't for me. I was, you know, in the first month, I was 17 plus stone, 17 and a half stone. So it's not very good on your knees. And walking is much nicer. So I basically started walking as opposed to running. And I got into these virtual apps, and I was in a race effectively against my sister from Land's End to John O'Groats on one of these virtual apps.
Oh, they remind me of lockdown. So many people did that.
Yeah, I mean, I've done Land's End to John O'Groats, and I've walked Route 66 in America from Chicago to LA, which is 1,300 miles.
Nigel, I had, just to digress slightly, I had a guy on my radio show months ago. This was in lockdown, and he's in his 80s, and he'd fathomed one of these apps, and he was actually walking to the centre of the earth. And I thought it was absolutely brilliant.
Bit hot there.
Very hot. We came on like a bit of a disclaimer on the back of it. And Albert in Cone isn't actually walking to the centre of the earth. It's virtual.
Yeah. No, I mean, that was game changing, really. So what that did, because I was in this competitive sort of race to John O'Groats, I worked out that I really needed to be doing 15,000 steps a day. Because to get back to the office, say, for and be at work for 9, and 15,000 steps for me works out at around about 9 kilometers. So without knowing it, I was doing 9 km by 9 a.m. And after about sort of a week of doing this, I sort of realized that I was doing 9 km by 9 a.m. And that became the sort of campaign slogan for my new health regime. And I won the race to John O'Groats. And then, you know, by the time I got to day 28 or the first month of walking every day, 9 kilometers by 9 a.m., it became my new habit. And I think it's a much better habit to have than drinking a bottle of Chablis every night. So basically 9 km by 9 a.m. became my new habit. And I've literally walked every day for almost 16 months now. Before 9 o'clock, I do 9 kilometers.
Look at Ben's face.
No, I just Nigel, that's not the only thing you've done there, is it? To shift 4 stone, you haven't shifted 4 stone by walking. You must be doing
I'm not drinking.
Work. Really? So that's the 4 stones. You haven't done, like, you know, yeah, Instagram sign up to an Instagram workout like me.
So what happens is, well, what happened to me is that you take the booze out of the equation and all the other nice things start. So you start sleeping better, your anxiety goes, you start looking at food in a different way. So, you know, if I was drinking, I'd be eating bacon sandwiches or a bag of chips or a pie and chips from the chip shop or something, just to make feel okay, because I'd like knock back 5 or 6 pints the night before. You know, I don't do that. I'm not on a diet. The only diet that I'm on is I just don't drink alcohol. And then what's happened is my whole food intake has changed. So I've been a vegetarian for like almost 10 months now. I use the same principles in stopping eating meat. But because I wanted to, I really, really wanted to, because I just thought that, you know, a healthy person doesn't eat meat. That became, again, a value. And it's true. I feel great after not eating meat. So the answer to the weight loss is really on the walks, the other great thing about walking is it gives me a chance to meditate. And so I meditate at least 15 minutes every day. And I have done, well, since I was 16 months, 17 months. I was playing around with meditation in the early days because I didn't really know what it was. And I think a lot of blokes in their 50s, they haven't got a clue what it is. They think it's like someone sitting in a lotus position.
A lot of
like
women aged around 48 haven't got a clue either, Nigel.
What a game changer. And so I got into like forest bathing and sort of like the environment and how you can meditate out in nature. And so you don't have to sit in a lotus position cross-legged. I literally meditate as I walk along country lanes. And you can, there's so many great types of meditation. Again, all in the book. The classic one that I do regularly, or go-to one, is sound meditation or audio. So what I do is I cut out all the sounds apart from the ones that are around me. So I'm not really looking at anything. Obviously, I'm looking at where I'm walking and the steps that I'm taking. But it's amazing what you hear. And so you start off and you can just hear one bird, but then all of a sudden there's another one about, oh, where's that? It's about, you know, 20 yards away. And then you hear some, your footprints, you know, on the ground, and then you hear the rain hitting like the trees or the rustle of the wind through the leaves. And there are literally 50 to 60 sounds going on, which your people are not aware of because they're not focused or they're not present. All these great things are always around us, but you don't notice
when you're drinking.
What I do a lot of is I follow the Japanese 72 micro seasons. I'm not sure if you've heard of those, but basically the Japanese split their year into 72 micro seasons called Kō. So the one we're in at the moment is called the dew glistens on the white grass. And so they're these sort of beautiful phrases that tell you what the 5-day season is all about. So there are 72 of them over the year. And the reason why they do this is because they focus you in on the smaller minute changes that are going on in that particular 5 days in the environment. And it gets you more in rhythm with the outdoors and it makes you more present to seeing what is changing. Whereas, you know, if we just call it spring, you know, or summer or autumn, it's just too big a time reference. And so what I do on the walks is I look at what the Japanese equivalent season is in this 5 days, and then work out what the UK one is at the moment. And so today I've sort of declared the UK Japanese season as the mist hovers on the horizon, because it's been the first morning for some time that I've noticed like this low hanging mist. And back to the point of all this, it's what I'm doing by doing that is I'm actually focusing my mind on what's around me. And that, if you do it enough, creates space between your thoughts, because we have over 55,000 thoughts a day that run through our heads. And the only way, and most of them are like crap about the past or worries about the future. So they make you not present. So if you train your mind to actually be more present, then it does become more present. And even if you just get another 4 or 5%, then your reaction time will be less like I'm reacting to something, and you'll more like respond to it. You'll become a calmer person. You will have less anxiety. You'll sleep better. And this is what happens. I'm only really, really seeing the huge benefits of this 18 months on. It starts straight away, but now it's massive. And it's the walking for me. I called it 9km by 9am, and I wanted to sort of get other people involved. But I do understand that not everyone can walk 9km. It is quite a long distance. And so the 9km by 9am challenge is about doing something challenging early in the morning. It is a Facebook group, and you basically, you know, you just have to show up, whether it's like a 500 meter walk or a 10 kilometer cycle ride. It's basically challenging yourself to do something different and to get out there, as you say, Sharon, and just experience the environment and meditate at the same time by listening to what's going on around you is one of the great ways to do it.
I did it this morning, Nigel, in honour of you coming on the podcast. It's been a while since I've been out there doing a proper
walk. Oh, fantastic.
But I couldn't do it by 9am because I had to take the kids to school.
Then it doesn't count.
Then I had an ATI Zoom call.
Doesn't count.
But I did. It does count.
I was trying to think what would I have described my Japanese season as this morning? I think it would be the dog shits in the long grass.
That's That's great. I like that. But if you became aware of it, then it's work.
That's the thing. What you've just been saying, I didn't do that today. I went out and I was very in my own head this morning when I was out. And I did the distance, but I was thinking about all the things that I need to do and all the things. I wasn't actually paying attention. So that's what I need to do. I'm going to do it again tomorrow.
Unlike you, Ben, on my drive, I didn't have... There's no chance of me walking 9 km before 9 a.m. I'm driving into work early doors. What was that? Describe that season today, Nigel, that you mentioned.
Yeah, it's basically the white dew glistens on the green grass.
Oh, I'm getting mixed up. I thought there was something about mist, like a...
Oh no, yeah, sorry. So that's the Japanese one. So the one I've defined as the UK one. Mist hovers on the horizon.
As I was driving into work this morning, it was the most beautiful, beautiful sunrise. It was about 6:30, 6:45, and the mist was just rising on the horizon. And there is not a day where I don't look over this one particular bridge down the River Ribble as I'm driving into work, and I just look at it and I go, thank Christ. I'm not drinking anymore. Yeah. And today it was a really, really lovely feeling, talking about what we've mentioned about nature and about that low-hanging mist. It was absolutely beautiful.
Nigel, as you know, we've got some of our community members watching. I'd like to end with a couple of questions from them. They kind of relate to each other. Maggie has asked, how long did it take you, Nigel, to rewire your mind to become the person you wanted to become? And Rachel has asked, in the early days, even though you decided on day two that you're a non-drinker, did you ever have any thoughts of pressing that fuck it button, or did it disappear? And if you did have those thoughts, how did you deal with that, with the new mindset?
Yeah. Okay. I'll do the second one first. In the first few days, on day one, even though I was 100% into doing this, there was probably 30 or 40 let's press the buttons, but they get less and less. And I never ever believed that I would press it. The closest I got to it, because I stopped drinking on the 8th of December, and again, this was another reason for sort of, which I sort of almost like fell into, was it was probably the hardest month to stop drinking, because it's like drinker's paradise. You know, you can drink as much as you want in December, but in a way I told myself that if I can do it now, I can do it. If I can do it then, I can do it anytime, basically. So if I got through December, then everything was going to be like so much easier. So I was in Marks and Spencer's with my wife, and I always used to buy a bottle of port or two at Christmas. And I was only like 10 days in. And for some reason, I was just standing in front of this bloody bottle of port sort of point of sale, just almost salivating. And I didn't put it in the basket, which was great. And I just worked on myself, and I just told myself, no. And it was the wolves, basically. And I didn't feed that wolf. I fed the other one, and I got a bottle of the non-secco and put that in. And then I sort of just raced to the till and got out of there, because I just needed to be out of that environment. And for me, that was a massive win. And so I reflected on it, and it made me really strong for the next time that happened. It never, ever happened that bad again. That was the worst one. And I got over it. So I just taught myself, well, that was it. I've won. I've actually can do it. I mean, it's Christmas, it's port, it's Marks and Spencer's. And I did it. I walked out of the freaking shop with a bottle of non-secco. And so but that just reaffirmed to me that what I'd been telling myself every day, that I was a healthy non-drinker. I mean, after a year, I'd never, ever think about it. And I wouldn't even think about it again. It's just like, would I jump out of a third story window? No, I wouldn't. I look at it like that. I literally just wouldn't do it. I have no affiliation. It has no control over me whatsoever. I've got rid of it. And that's that's almost like the being born again part. I mean, it's like it almost gives me a rush of adrenaline through my whole body to think that I no longer, it has no control over me anymore. So
would you say then, in answer to Maggie's question, how long did it take to rewire your mind to become the person you wanted to become? Would you say that was a year? Or is it, was it day two? Coming back to that, would you have got through that standing in front of the port had you not already had done that kind of rewiring?
See, the thing is, I don't look at it that way because, for example, I never weigh myself because my goal is not to lose weight. I only have three goals, and they're called journey goals. So they're not like, let's go to the moon. They're basically get up at 5 o'clock. That's goal number one. And I know if I've got up at 5 o'clock, I'm going to go for a walk. So that doesn't need to be goal number two, because why the hell would I be up at 5 o'clock if I wasn't going to do something else? So goal number one, get up at 5 o'clock. Goal number two, spend at least 15 minutes listening to or meditating while you're on that walk. So, and goal number three, don't drink alcohol today. So those are the only three things that I do. And then everything else falls into place. So my targets, I don't have like, I'm going to be 12 stone by X. Because if I had that, I'd never do it. But the easy thing for me is I can get up at 5. I can go for a walk. I can meditate. I hate drinking. So as long as I keep doing those three things, which I still do every day, all my goals happen, because being alcohol free is having a superpower. It's like you've got 5 or 6% more intelligence, and not just IQ. I think emotional intelligence, which is the real key, that you're able to act calmer, reflect on things. But you know, the question was, did write it
how,
down?
How long did it take
to be rewired?
Yeah.
I think the honest answer is I really thought that I rewired myself. And I know, you know, Sharon said you can't do that on day one, but I put the wiring in. It was there.
I just need to jump in there. Some people can do that on day one. Absolutely. And if you can do that, flipping heck, every credit. Yeah. I think it takes incredible strength. Comes back to what we talked about earlier. I just know it's not easy for everybody in that situation. But yeah, if you can do that on day one, absolutely brilliant. Go forth and smash alcohol-free life.
Yeah. It was tough though, you know. I mean, in the sense that, you know, you mentioned the seaside, you know, going down to the sea. I mean, I did that maybe 20 of the 30 walks in the first month were down by the sea, because I used to watch the waves crashing, because I knew, I told myself that cravings were waves. So I like to see them crash, because I'm a very visual person. And so it was just great, like watching a wave crash, because I just knew that was a craving for me. And that, you know, again, it was like making sure that those footsteps on the earth or those thoughts in the mind were digging that groove, that new sort of Pavlovian groove in my mind, basically.
And did you gently sob?
Did I gently sob? I didn't know.
It's okay, Nadja. You're amongst friends. You know, if you did, it's all right. You can tell us.
I cried on day 365. I was so happy that I got to that. It was just like elation. What one of the best days of my life.
Nigel, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. We have had so much to talk about. We've run over time. I think we could probably talk for another hour. It's been a really, really interesting discussion. So thank you so much. Before you go, Nigel, do give your book a good old plug on our podcast.
What? He hasn't done that yet.
I don't think he's mentioned it.
He's not mentioned. He's got a book.
What's it called again? Because there's only 72 copies behind your head there on your shelf. Just give it a mention.
It's called Walking Back to Happiness, The Secret to Alcohol-Free Living and Wellbeing. It's on Amazon. It's only $9.99 for the paperback, which is, I believe, is less than two glasses of wine these days.
You're probably right.
definitely a pint and a half. Yeah, that's all you get in London, I think. So it's worth it. It's worth it. And the hardback is 17 quid and the Kindle is, I'm not sure, £7-8. But it's on Amazon and Walking Back to Happiness. And if you go to my website, you can find out all about 9km by 9am and my coaching and my books and publications. So that's 9km by 9am.com.
Nigel Jones, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us on Over the Influence.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I really, really enjoyed that. That was just such a cracking chat with Nigel. I mean, it's a big ask. Ben, isn't it a big ask? 9K by 9am?
You know what? No, not really.
Like, really?
Yeah, because if you just... Like, I love getting out and walking anyway. It's clears my head. It's not good just, you know, physically. I mean, it's good for me mentally. But I think if you kind of... It's just a small... It's not a major change, is it? Get up a bit earlier, get out. And as Nigel said in this episode, if you can't do 9K, don't worry about doing the distance that he's doing. Just do something. Just do something.
I love the simplicity of it. We have so many guests, don't we, that talk about just getting out. Like you say, it doesn't have to be 9K, does it, Eck? It doesn't. You could do 9,000 steps. Don't tell Nigel I said that. But it is. It's about doing something, isn't it? It's about doing something. And I love the simplicity of it. Especially in early sobriety, when you can be sort of rolling around in no man's land, thinking, what am I doing? How am I going to fill your time? Well, I'll tell you what you can do. I'll tell you how you can fill your time and maybe set yourself some goals, some challenges. Get all over the OTI Outdoor Adventure Schedule for 2023. It's live, Ben. It's happening, Ben. We're doing Scotland's highest mountain, nay, the UK's highest mountain, Ben. We're doing England's highest mountain, Ben. We've already done Wales's high. What Wales? Wales's is. We've already done Snowdon, and we've got all sorts happening. We're going on treks. We're going on the water. We are doing a bit of rock climbing, and we're trying to get pretty much as far as we can to all four corners of the UK-ish, mostly. We're trying our very best. So if you want to get involved, have a look at the website, overtheinfluence.co.uk. All the adventures are listed there. But in order to book on, you do need to be a member.
In order to even see them and all the details of all the events, it is in our members area because you have got to be a community member.
It's private. Of course
it's
it is.
It's private. It's But yeah, you'll see it on the little click down. You won't be able to access any of the members areas. You can, if you go to more on the website, members area, you'll see all the different things that we do as part of the membership. This is one of the best ones. People love this. And also, people use them. Like, we've got events running now, booked until October 2023. But people use them to kind of mark milestones and go, it's accountability, isn't it? I want to be on the top of Ben Nevis, alcohol free.
Yeah.
You know, it's great to have things in the diary like that.
I was covering one of your Zoom calls, actually, which was just brilliant. It was fantastic. I've never done one of your calls as such, and I got to meet your regulars, which was never... I'm never available at that time of day, so it was really, really good. Anyway, I won't digress. There was somebody on that call that was saying, right, I'm not sure if I'm fit enough just yet for Scarfell, but she's booked on. And it gives her, I don't know how many months, 6-8 months, something like that, to train, to get ready. But also, she knows as well she's going to be X amount of time further on in her AF journey. So we are really, really looking forward to that. Get involved, have a look at the website. And if you want any more information at all, if you're in two minds of whether to sign up and join, you can drop us an email and we'll do our very best to answer your questions. OTIHQ@overtheinfluence.co.uk. Thank you kindly. Same time next week.